Welcome to the debut episode of Rocket Talk, the Tor.com podcast. I am Justin Landon, and I am your host. Today, we are joined by Emily Asher Perrin and Bradley P. Bowyer. Emily is a staff writer at Tor.com, and Brad is the author of the Lays of Anaskaya trilogy and the forthcoming 12 Kings of Sharakai from Daw. Thanks so much for being here today, you two.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
So before we get started, obviously the title of this podcast, everybody that's downloaded it will say that we're going to talk about the Lego movie. So real quick, what did you guys think? Brad, why don't you go first? What did you think about the film in general? Did you enjoy it?
I liked it a lot. Yeah, I went with my wife and my two kids. So part of that was battling the kids and keeping them in seats. But while I was watching the film, I really enjoyed it. I'm a sucker for... I come from a computer background. I used to want to be in game design and graphics and such. And so I was really taken by the animation studio, what they did with the film. I thought it was really well done. But beyond that, I really liked the story as well. I mean, it pulled me through, kept me interested. And as Jay Lake said, the jokes played well throughout the whole thing and didn't wear out their welcome. So I had a great time with it.
What about you, Emily?
I enjoyed it a lot more than I expected to. I thought the sense of humor was really well balanced for kids and adults. And I saw it with my fiance in a theater full of screaming, very happy kids. But I definitely thought once I got toward the end of it, I had this sort of realization of like, oh, I'm watching a commercial, and I don't care that I'm watching a commercial.
Yeah,
I'm
right,
actually
right.
Enjoying that, and that's sort of creepy. But I still liked it anyway. So yeah, what does that tell you?
You know, the kid that was weaned as a kid that was weaned on G.I. Joe. It was sort of like coming
right.
home to a film that was basically just a big advertisement, which I sort of enjoyed because I mean I love G.I. Joe. Like I thought that was the best thing ever, and it really just is a total commercial.
You know, I wonder too. You guys, I'm sure, saw in the. As they started building things, occasionally they would stop on certain Lego pieces, and there would be a little call out for the part number that it was. I wonder if that was real. I wonder if they. I suspect that it is, but I have no idea if it is or not. But it made it very blatantly obvious that this is tied directly to our marketing and our production. Teams. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed we didn't really invite a total Lego nerd on this who could tell us exactly what part number.
Yeah, right.
Wrong.
And talk about all the retro sets and things that they used,
right.
which were so clearly there for the older Lego nerds in the audience to get excited over.
Spaceman, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So kind of building on that question, and this is an interesting question. Like, do you kind of view this as a genre movie? I mean, from our perspective, is it a genre movie? Emily?
I would think so. To me, it reads that way, especially because, I mean, with how they used Batman and the Star Wars characters that they had and, you know, various bits from other fandoms, it almost read kind of like, it reads like fanfic. It reads kind of like crack fanfic. So that I think sort of all by itself kind of makes it sort of settles it in genre.
Yeah, what do you think, Brad?
Yeah, and there's so much an amalgam of so many different genres being pulled into the movie. I think it has to sit in genre, even though it's not, you can't pin it to any one subgenre. But yeah, I think it is.
I actually love the comparison to fanfic. I think it's totally fanfic. That's fantastic. I'm going to have to think about that some more because I've become very into fanfic lately. A friend of mine I've become friends with is... Renee, who writes for Strange Horizons and a few other outlets, and she's a big fanfic pusher, and she's been pushing fanfic on. Maybe this can be my introduction to fanfic, the Lego movie.
Yeah, the mashups.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And it was interesting, too, that you saw some combinations of different properties that you wouldn't see probably anywhere else, you know, but Lego has this, they're an interesting hub of all these different properties that they can pull together in one movie, like having Star Wars and Batman together. You know, when are you going to see that? Or Dumbledore and Gandalf having a conversation with each other or an argument,
right.
as the case was.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so I'm going to get a little deep into this, because that's what I do. One of the things that really stood out to me in the film, just like right away, like as soon as I watched it, was Emmett, the protagonist of the film, is this worker bee. He's the perfect cog in the wheel of Lego World. And what to me, as he progressed through the film, like, I very much saw him undergoing what I consider the Joseph Campbell hero's journey, at least to some degree. And I'm going to read real quick that Joseph Campbell's summary of the hero's journey, as he did in was it Hero of a Thousand Faces? A hero ventures forth from the world of common day into a region of supernatural wonder. Fabulous forces are there encountered, and a decisive victory is won. The hero comes back from this mysterious adventure with the power to bestow boons on his fellow man. And that's how the hero's journey is described by Joseph Campbell. And as I thought about that with Emmett, he clearly undergoes this, but he does so in a unique way to me. So I before I talk about what I think, I'd love to hear what you think about that. Brad, why don't you take a stab at that?
Well, yeah, I mean, after you had mentioned the hero's journey, as you know, I was getting ready for the podcast, I kind of went back through and thought about all the different phases that they went through. I had to pull up, you know, the outline for the hero's journey and see what matched and what didn't, you know, and it was kind of interesting the way that that it did match up in some ways, but then it went completely counter in other areas. So like you're saying, Emmett is shown to be a cog in this gigantic machine, right? And he's very much not the hero, and that keeps happening throughout the whole movie. They sort of play against expectations, you know, and he's supposed to be the special, you know, the hero, they keep saying, and a master builder they expect him to be, and he's nothing like that. He's absolutely not those things, and most often doesn't rise to the occasion. But there were times too, I don't want to get too spoily towards the end, it did, I think, follow it to a degree as well, the way the movie resolved. So it wasn't like it was a complete rejection of the hero's journey, but they definitely tried to play against expectation, it felt to me.
What do you think, Emily?
Well, I agree with that. I also think it's sort of interesting how, you know, they took the hero's journey and he had to be useful. You know, they couldn't have him really be dead weight through the whole movie, even though they kind of play at it. So every once in a while, he creates something that doesn't work out for them, but then ends up being helpful, because you can't really make a character a hero without letting them do something that ends up being heroic, even if it wasn't exactly intentional. So they have to play at it, even at points when they seem like they're trying to sort of withdraw him from it, which I thought was very interesting.
Well, he clearly he fails, right? Even when he tries to do something good, he fails. And even when he succeeds in spite of failure.
yes.
I mean, that's pretty much true throughout the film. I would say he never really fully does something intentionally awesome.
he stumbles into success more than anything else.
Right. You know, certainly with the you know, the couch and all of that and that sort of stuff. It's clearly him sort of stumbling into it. So I guess from my perspective is one of the interesting things that one of the classic cases of the hero's journey is the call to action. Right. And so for him, the call to action is clearly, he finds the peace, like the peace of resistance. That is clearly his call to action. And Wildside, his counterpart, is the one that's giving him that clarion call to step up and be the hero. One of the classic tropes within the hero's journey is the refusal of that call, is saying, no, not me. Emmett doesn't really do that. He actually sort of embraces it. He's like, hell yeah, you know, I am the hero, because I've been ignored. I've been cast aside constantly. I try to follow the rules and it never gets me anywhere. So all of a sudden now, somebody recognizes him as the hero, and he pretty much like jumps all in. He's like, yeah, let's do it.
I think it helps. It's sold to him as something good, which is never the case. And it's not like you have to go and defeat this evil thing and you're probably going to die. They were like, no, you're really important. Don't you want to be important?
Right. It's almost totally like the counter of how you know, let's use since this is the Tor.com podcast, we'll jump right to the Wheel of Time. Right. So like Lan and Moraine show up. Spoiler alert. Lan and Moraine show up in Eamon's field and they say to Rand, you know, it is like, it's this scary thing that he has to accept pretty early on in the book, that he has to do this. And Emmett really has no concept of what he's getting into, I would say, probably until, I don't know, the third of the way through the movie, probably.
Yeah.
You know,
not until Numinous. Numinous, is that the guy's name?
Vitruvius.
Vitruvius.
Yeah.
Breaks the bad news to him. He's really just sort of, he's on a lark.
Yeah, I thought it was really one of my favorite parts of the movie is the call to adventure. What would normally be the call to adventure, they're supposed to find this. There's a prophecy where the chosen one will find the piece of resistance, and that's what Wildside, the female character, is looking for in the beginning. And Emmett totally just sorry to spoil this a little bit, but he just stumbles upon it. And in fact, he just like falls onto it basically, and then moves on to the rest of the adventure. And as you say, he's sort of swept along, and he's just kind of fine with it. There's no refusal of the call. He isn't trying to find anything. No one's trying to get him to it either. So it was another play that I thought was a nice twist.
Yeah, Emily, what do you think about the fact that throughout the film there's sort of this waiting game of them waiting for Emmett to step up, waiting for him to be the hero that they expect him to be? And really, I'm trying to think, there probably is a point in the film where they sort of realize that he's not going to be that. But it's this constant hoping. And in some of the other, you know, classic heroes' journeys, you do see them, you know, they try to mold the hero, they try to guide the hero. And there's not actually very much of that. It's sort of like, okay, Emmett, do your thing, you know?
yeah.
Get to work. Well,
and then they're definitely sort of, they're waiting around a lot. And it's of course, half the humor of the movie is just watching everyone around him sort of run circles and make things work. I guess, I mean, they make a good point, and I suppose, I wonder how often this is sort of the case in other comparative journeys where the idea is really the hero is the hero for the ability to think outside the box. Like, you know, I talk about Star Wars usually whenever I do this because it fits the mold so easily. But, you know, the fact that everyone tells Luke from the beginning, like, this is how this is going to end. You're going to do this. You're going to kill your father. These are the only ways that you can fix the universe. And ultimately, Luke's answer to that is, no, there's got to be a different way to do this. And that's really kind of what Emmett does. They keep telling him, like, we've got instructions. We know how to piece these specific things together. We all have our own specific sort of sets. And he is the only person who's like, well, he doesn't have great ideas, but he does end up having to think sort of outside by being on the inside, by being the one person who knows how to do everything traditionally.
Isn't that fascinating? He's the hero who, he's unique in this circle by being the most boring.
Right. Right. The most mundane, the one that pays attention to the rules, so to speak. And I thought it was pretty brilliant that he made everybody change to what he was essentially towards the middle and, you know, going into the middle parts of the hero's journey and such. You know, he didn't rise to the occasion. He didn't learn like Neo did, you know, getting all these cool skills and stuff he could use in the Matrix. Everybody else became like him so that they could finish off Lord Business.
Lord Business. What a great name.
Yeah.
And President Business. I that was a lot of fun. You know, I live in Texas, so the entire time to the film, I kept thinking Lord Business looked a lot like Rick Perry. which I just thought was sort of, I don't know why I thought that, but I felt like he maybe looked a little bit like Rick Perry. So we won't go too deep into that. So
you do have to live there after all.
So speaking of the hero's journey, I'm going to skip ahead. I'm going to skip off that a little bit and kind of go into sort of like the larger metaphor of the movie. Cause you know, this is a literary smart podcast, so we like to use words like metaphors. So, like, I think one of the clearest metaphors in the film, and I'm going to ask you guys whether you agree or not, is that there's Legos are predicated on instructions, right? Like, you buy the Death Star Lego set, which, by the way, is, like, for ages 19 and up. it has, like, a bajillion pieces, and there really is only one way to put together a Death Star, right? So they have these very intricate instructions, and at the beginning of the film, Emmett is obviously, he actually carries around a set of instructions to guide his life. Almost like a What Would Jesus Do bracelet or something like that. I mean, he's constantly referencing the instructions on every decision that he makes in his life. And to me, as the film went along, one of the biggest metaphors was that it isn't about putting the pieces together the right way. It's about putting the pieces together the way that works for you. And that perhaps there's some sense of community in that. What do you guys think? Is that kind of the larger metaphor? Am I getting that right, or am I a little off?
I would agree with that. I have sort of some personal. I worked in a kindergarten classroom when I was in college as part of a class I was taking, and I watched a very excellent kindergarten teacher sort of teach kids how to play. And by teaching kids how to play, I mean he didn't. He was very good at occasionally applying a rule to help them think differently, but he never enforced anything that, you know, the way that he taught them how to build with wooden blocks was he said to them, you know, at a certain point during the year, they would always build out further and further out. And he stopped them eventually and went, you can't build out anymore. You can only build up. And he was like, and now they're going to learn architecture basically by themselves by having to build something higher. Whereas I also watched my very young cousin as a kid get a set of building blocks and watch his parents proceed to show him, this is how you put them together. Look, you can put them together like this and make a house. And he didn't care at all. It wasn't something he was interested in. And I find that dichotomy and you know, how we, especially in regards, because, you know, Legos are, you know, for the most part for children, the idea of moderating play and creativity and in the same ways that works as a metaphor for life in a lot of ways, you know, the ability to think differently is in many ways something that is, it certainly shouldn't be frowned upon, but we even begin to do it as early as ages 6 and up. So I do think that was definitely part of what the movie was trying to tell people.
That kindergarten teacher, man, he was really getting these kids bought in on urban renewal early.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think, Brad?
Yeah, I agree in general, although the bigger message for me kind of struck home when Emmett was thrown out of the Lego world into a different world. I'll leave it at that for now because it was a surprising part for me. And if I had been shown that as a spoiler, it wouldn't have been quite as impactful. But somebody sees how Lord Business, you know, is and how he was modeled, essentially how he became who he was. And it's an eye opener for him. So for me, the biggest takeaway was not so much built around like instructions and throwing those off, but more don't be so rigid that you don't see the wealth of things before you. And, you know, and to embrace difference, to embrace change. That was the biggest thing for me.
Yeah, those are easier things to take away when you have children sitting next to you. To some degree. You know, I had my 4-year-old was on my lap during the second half of the movie. She has already early onset secondhand embarrassment, which is kind of weird for a 4-year-old. But like every time there would be an intimate moment between the characters, and when I say intimate, we're talking about the Lego movie. So, I mean, it's like hand touching.
Right.
Anytime there was like an intimate moment, she would make my hand cover her eyes. So that was
funny.
It was very strange. I wasn't really sure. You know, it's like the violence or the scary parts were fine. But like anytime like Emmett was making googly eyes at somebody, it was bad news bears for us.
Aww.
But okay, yeah, I agree with you, Brad. That's obviously also going on, Brad, but not nearly as fascinating for this particular discussion. So I'm going to skip it.
Toss that aside.
One of the things that I was thinking about is I thought about this instruction metaphor, whether it's the main message of the movie or not. It is present to some degree. And they are also rewriting the instructions on storytelling to some degree, as we've already talked about with the hero's journey. They sort of take some forms, but then they pick and choose what they want to do with them. And with the hero's journey, they've really done some different things. And there are other storytelling devices that they use in the film that I think are breaking the mold to some degree. And I'll talk about another one of those in a few minutes. But for now, that willingness to overcome storytelling tropes that we rely on so heavily in genre was really refreshing to me. But what was very frustrating to me is that one of those tropes or pitfalls that we fall into so much in genre is how we portray women and how we don't frankly give them the fair representation and equal representation that they should have. And the Lego movie had several opportunities to have more robust female characters, Wonder Woman being a key one. I don't think it's a spoiler to say to anybody that Wonder Woman gets short shrift in this film. Just like she will get in Captain America too. And so, I don't know. I felt like that was really, really a missed opportunity to rewrite the expectations and tropes, which they had shown such a willingness to do. What do you think, Emily?
I really agree. I thought it was sort of telling. There is a point in the script where she very pointedly says to Emmett that she's sort of upset that the special turned out to be him because she wanted it to be her, and that, you know, she had been searching for it, and here he goes, he just falls through, you know, right, lands right on top of the thing, and now he's the special, and the journey goes on from there. And I thought, that's so interesting, because that is a perfect metaphor for what it feels like to be a woman looking in on most fiction. Everything that you see, you go, wow, God, I wish that were me, and it's always some guy. And they made the point of making the point, but using that as sort of like a way of saying, we get it, we're just not going to really address it here. So that was definitely disappointing, I think, you know, and they move towards certain, you know, areas where that could have been, they could have given her more to do. Unikitty was hilarious, and that could have been, you know, expanded. They did have Wonder Woman, and she does nothing at all. And that was pretty distressing, I think, absolutely.
I agree on the Wonder Woman thing. I wonder if some of it is the fact that she's just, unfortunately, I had a long conversation. I was on a panel at a convention recently talking about Wonder Woman, and at the end of the day, she's sort of a troublesome character because there just isn't enough. Frankly, I don't think there's enough depth to Wonder Woman's character, and it's just been a huge problem over the years. And maybe that had something to do with it. I don't know. But there were other characters sort of in the core group that weren't terribly interesting either, and she easily could have been swapped in for one of those. I felt like, and it would have greatly enhanced. That particular thing. Brad, I want to ask you this question. Do you think that it's possible, because we had talked earlier about this being a long-form commercial for Lego, and at the end of the day, just like a Star Wars film has to go through LucasArts, this film had to go through Lego. Do you think it's at least a reasonable hypothesis to say that perhaps the fact that Emmett is a man and some of the other key roles are male, particularly with some of the meta stuff that happens toward the end of the film? I mean, Legos at the end of the day are marketed in large part to boys. Do you think that was intentional? Do you think perhaps the filmmakers may not have had the freedom on that particular score? I'm very curious about that.
you know, I don't know which I would rather that it be, that it was sort of self-serving like that and they're going for the audience, or that they were sort of numb to it all and just fell into the old trope of having, you know, the hero be the boy. I don't know which it might be, but it was frustrating for me as well. As I watch more of, you know, and read, you know, these types of books, I yearn for something that breaks the mold a little bit. And it's since I have a daughter now, especially, I mean, even before that, but it really strikes home for me now. Having stories like that just makes me uncomfortable. I kind of squirm into my seat for my daughter in a way, you know, but for myself as well. You know, they could have had so many, you know, it doesn't have to be Wonder Woman. I'm sure they have, you know, there's tons of female characters in the Lego canon. Why couldn't they have brought some of those into it? And, you know, you look at stories like Harry Potter, and Harry Potter's, of course, the hero. And there's kind of two, him and Ron. But at least Hermione is there, and she's very smart and very capable. And she's there the whole way and helps, you know, the entire time throughout the whole seven books. Whereas this, kind of like The Matrix, Wildside comes into the story very competent in the beginning and then sort of falls away towards the end where you know, Emmett kind of takes center stage at that point. And I almost wish it was kind of an ensemble type of resolution, more so than it ended up being. So, yeah, definitely some squirminess there.
I also wonder, because, you know, Lego has endured quite a bit of bad press due to creating the Lego Friends line, which was specifically marketed at girls. And, of course, none of the minifigures from the Lego Friends line, because they don't look like regular Lego minifigs, were, to my knowledge, in the film at all. Or if they were, they were, like, stuck in a background shot somewhere. So I do wonder if the sort of bad press they've been dealing with at this point, it's sort of silly, because you feel like that this would have been a really good point to make a move of good faith and try to, you know, show a typical Lego minifig as a, you know, a female character doing more and not making, you know, the Lego Friends be the only place where girls can play. But they sort of ignored it, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, and the only anecdotal evidence I have for this is my two kids. You know, I was never a huge Lego fan, but you know, now they have the different sets that you can get with the instructions, like they showed in the movie, that show every little step of the way how to build front to end, and you, by the time you're done, you have a finished thing, whatever they show on the box. And my daughter started playing with those, and we did one or two, you know, together at first. And then she picked up on it pretty quickly, and she just loves the putting that together, and she's like so proud of herself when it's done. And there too, like, I look at, you know, the different superheroes that they have in the different sets and stuff, and I'm like, I just wish there was more for her to grab onto as, you know, girl power is, you know, what I'm into now with her. So it's frustrating that there's not more that way.
Yeah, and I'll be the first to admit, Brad, you sort of hedged a little bit, but I'll just be real honest. You know, I didn't think about any of this stuff until I had a daughter. I was an only child, you know, only boy child. And, you know, I didn't, other than my mother, there weren't a lot of women in my life, and it just never really stuck my thought a lot about. But as soon as I had a daughter, man, I really started paying attention to this stuff, and I'd like to think I've grown a lot on the subject, and it bugged me. It definitely did. And you know, the other thing is interesting is my daughter plays very heavily with a Lego set that's Ariel, Princess Ariel, and Flounder, and, you know, it's a whole mermaid under the sea thing. Lego has rights to Disney. Now, I don't know if those rights are different than their rights are with Star Wars, but somehow I've imagined Star Wars and Disney's lawyers are, well, Star Wars is owned by Disney. So the fact is, like, I don't know why some of those Disney princesses couldn't have also been in the film. So I don't know. Those are all questions that we can't possibly answer, but I'm glad that we all agree that it's a problem.
Yeah. And especially like on the end of Disney princesses, that's, you'd feel like if they had the license and the ability to work for them, you know, I feel like that's part of the reason why Wonder Woman wasn't used. Like, if you look at Will Arnett's Batman, he's aping Christian Bale. There's like a very specific pop culture reference there. Whereas with Wonder Woman, it's like, are you copying Linda Carter? Will people understand that? You know, and that's something that would be easier to do with a Disney princess because they're more currently in the public consciousness, I guess.
Well, and how do you make jokes, right? Like, it also becomes difficult, I think.
Right.
You know, like the Green Lantern joke, right? Like how pathetic the Green Lantern is, right? But you can't make Wonder Woman that way. So how do you do humor around her? I do wonder if maybe she had a larger role and they realized, like, oh God, our jokes are really problematic.
Right.
You know, I don't know. Maybe they just couldn't, they didn't have enough, well, felt like they had enough to work with. I don't know.
That's why they pay the writers to make a decent script.
You would hope.
Yeah.
So you brought up Will Arnett's Batman, and I think I think it's the best representation of Batman ever, because I think it like very clearly it points out like all the things that are wrong with Batman. Yes?
Yes. Agreed.
What did you think, Brad? It just points out all the silliness of Batman, all the angst and all the
And it tries to make it semi-serious, but is sort of winking at the audience while it does it.
The whole scene where he comments on how he likes to work when they're building their group project and they're all kind of working on their own. My daughter's been repeating that line all week. I mean, it was very, you know, I only work in black. It was great. I really enjoyed how he did it. Have you guys heard the Batman song subsequently?
Yes, it's excellent.
No, I haven't heard that.
You should YouTube it, Brad. It's
The one that they played a little bit of in the movie.
In the car.
Yeah. Okay. There's a longer cut of it, and it's pretty silly and ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna give as if we haven't already been kind of spoilery. I'm gonna get really spoilery now. So if you have not seen the film yet, I would definitely probably check out at this point. I mean, I wouldn't check out because you probably love the sound of our voices. But,
and then return when they've seen the movie and finished the podcast.
Yes, exactly. So the last part of the movie is what I would call it's the meta narrative, right? It's the frame, kind of a frame story or a back frame story. And to me, it reminded me very much of Red Shirts to some degree. And the fact that Red Shirts is now undergoing a television treatment, it sort of occurred to me, it's like, is maybe meta's in. I mean, what did you guys think about how they used the real world at the end of the film? Was it successful? And as you think about that, I would posit another question from what we just talked about. If the young boy had been a girl, would it have changed anything? Brad?
Well, so, I didn't like it at first, actually, when they went, towards the end of the movie, Emmett is trying to help save the day by leaping off of the known universe into the beyond. And he ends up jumping off of a huge Lego table in a basement in the real world. And he starts to see who the boy is, you know, who is kind of him, but he's sort of one that's orchestrating this story. And then his father comes down the stairs. And this was the piece I was talking about earlier that was very poignant to me, because the father comes and he says, you know, he is Lord Business. And he says that the Emmett, you know, you can't be playing with this because I have it just like I like it. And you can't ruin it, you know. And he sees that he is the one that his son modeled Lord Business off of. And he's just totally shaken up by this. It changes him, you know, in just those few moments. And it was really powerful. But when it first happened, when he first came out in the real world, I was like, oh, man, you know, this was so internally consistent. It was going so, you know, so great. I love the animation. I don't want to be in the real world. I want to be in this story. But they did leave subtle clues, actually, along the way, because there was a few scenes where they would like go from one place to another, and you would see, I think, like a human hand moving things from one place to another, and somebody making a noise like a ship going from, you know, to make it go. So they actually did give a couple clues that was going to happen. It ended up being really effective for me. It ended up also leading to the final resolution of the story, and I won't give that away, but it followed from what happens with, you know, the father and these realizations. So would it have worked if he was a girl? You know, things would have been different, for sure. I don't think the story stays exactly the same, because, you know, boys have slightly different interests than girls. And in fact, there was a little tip of the hat to that right at the very end of the movie, because the father reveals that, well, now that you can play in this, you know, big Lego world, so can your little sister. And some things kind of pop up in the world. So I think it would have changed, but it could have been just as effective for sure.
Emily?
I really loved the transition. I was sort of waiting for it, because I did notice those little sort of clues sprinkled through, and I was sort of going like, we're going to go somewhere else. I can tell we're going somewhere, but
I was smarter than I was.
Well, I was surprised it was live action. I was sort of, right. I thought maybe they'll take us somewhere else, but it'll still be animated. And then it wasn't. And I was sort of like, ooh, this could be fun. I really do think that I think that it would have changed pretty profoundly if the little boy had been a little girl, especially if Emmett is the little girl's avatar. Because you decided to change that character to a girl, you're saying something very interestingly specific without really intending to. Because that's what I did. When I was a little kid, I pretended to be Luke Skywalker. I pretended to be boys all the time. I wasn't interested in being a princess. I wanted to be heroes. And I think that you'd be saying something pretty realistic by allowing that to be a little girl, but also it would invite a lot of commentary from the outside. Why make this decision? Why isn't the girl playing, you know, with a primary female avatar? What is the movie trying to say about, you know, children today and how this is different? So I think the controversy might have been worth it. I think it might have been really interesting. Also because I think it's much more common to get father-son stories than father-daughter stories. So that could have been really, really interesting if they'd wanted to go for it, but you know, they didn't really go there.
Well, and to some degree it really could have been interpreted as a real slap in Lego's face to some degree, or at least a slap to all toy makers, you know,
right.
They do produce a lot of these male-centric lines that girls play with prolifically. You know, we bought a Justice League set. I mean, they're awesome. They're like 6-7 inch tall, you know, plastic, molded plastic, really well-painted figurines. I'm very proud of them, obviously.
and it's nicely done.
And it's all the DC Universe characters, like 8 of them, and they're all the DC Universe characters. And it's, you know, of course, only Wonder Woman was the only girl. And my daughter plays the crap out of Batman and Superman. I mean, she won't touch Cyborg, but Batman and Superman get a lot of play. And sometimes Wonder Woman just gets iced out. I think you're totally right. I think that commentary would have been, I guess the reason I asked the question is I really think the commentary would have been very powerful if the boy at the end had been a girl. A real missed opportunity. And I would have forgiven almost everything else if that had been the case, because that would have been part of the message that there weren't.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that was a missed opportunity. You know, those are the things that I seem to notice these days with a 4-year-old. And I will tell you, my 4-year-old checked out in that movie at a certain point. And, you know, she's a little younger than perhaps the target demographic, but there were much younger children in there than my daughter. And I guess what she checked out at some point because she didn't have enough characters for her to get invested in. And I don't know. I think that's a real problem. So among a lot of the film that we've seen from other, you know, animated studios like Pixar and DreamWorks and others, some of the films that really come to mind are like Up. I mean, that movie like rocked my world. I think I was sobbing in the theater. How does this film stack up against some of those other animated features as really being something that adults can really get into and really enjoy? Is this as transcendent of a movie across age ranges as some of those others have been?
I think probably not. I think that I think this is a really fun movie. I think it's super topical. I think that I think it actually has a lot more in common with something like Shrek. The humor is very current. I think it'll still be funny, you know, 15, 20 years from now, moving on from that and, you know, sort of sweeping across various generations. I'm not sure it'll play, especially, you know, like you look at sort of, you know, you've got Batman and you've got sort of you've got classic Star Wars, but of course now we're moving into another, you know, a third trilogy. Like you have all of these, you know, we have yet to see how Harry Potter's legacy will continue over time, despite, I'm sure it'll do very well, but even so, you know, the recognizability of characters like Dumbledore and Gandalf, who are still very currently in the public consciousness, might sort of fade slightly. And I do think that the humor is very well situated with the here and now, especially with, you know, the commentary, $37 for a cup of coffee, you know, like it seems very like things we're struggling with today. So I think, it's a lot of fun, and I think it will continue to be fun for kids who maybe grow up watching it. But I don't know if farther into the future this is going to be, you know, sort of, I feel like Pixar movies are considered to be more pieces of art, and I don't know that this will quite pass into that realm.
Yeah, I'm with Emily here. I'm a huge fan of the Pixar movies. I have just about every one. The only stinker I can think of right now is Planes. But I like so much of their stuff. Up was awesome. We like Cars, Ratatouille, on and on, Wall-E. And the thing that Pixar does so well is not only having humor, not only having, you know, pretty good action, there are several times in the movie where they get very emotional and they pulled it off really well without making it boring for kids. So it's some very, you know, strong, touching moments that just pulled just the right note, you know, at the right time. And this movie had one strong emotional moment for me, which is when they jump to the real world and the father realizes what he's done, you know, to his kid and realizes what's happening and backs off of that. So he has an emotional change, and that was strong. But there weren't enough in the movie to resonate with me for more than, you know, I might see this again, but I've seen some of the Pixar movies, you know, dozen plus times because they're so well made. So yeah, I don't think it's in the same category. It's a good, but not great movie.
Well, there you have it. The referendum on the Lego movie from Emily Asher Parent and Bradley Bollier.
It is spoken.
And since I agree with you, I will call you guys right.
So, hooray!
So this has been Rocket Talk with the Lego Movie. Thank you guys so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.